Monday, January the 2nd, the national holiday, but no holiday around the LBJ Ranch. It was like a Marx Brothers comedy where about 20 people tumble one by one into a tiny stateroom capable of holding only two. We planned to return to Washington late this evening. Therefore, only today remained to work on the park across the river. And what a day. It was cold and brilliant. John Ben Shepherd and Mamie had flown in the night before, because he is a trustee appointed by John to hold the funds for the park. And a little past 9, we went out to the airport to meet Charles Kruger, who is chief planner for the National Park Service, and Douglas Hubbard, who is head of their visitor services. They were coming as a result from a call to Stuart Udall the night before that today was park planning day. And Will Odom drove out. He's chairman of the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission. And I asked Roy White to come because there's an old house on the place, part of which is constructed with stone and looked in the waning light of yesterday like it might be interesting enough to restore as a part of the administration center, perhaps to sell arts and crafts, or maybe as a tiny museum of the way a pioneer Texas farm family lived. And I began to pass coffee to all the guests as they arrived and to make arrangements for Mamie to be driven around by dear Betty Weinheimer to Johnson City and maybe Fredericksburg while we were working, and people kept on streaming in. A large, hearty man, Mr. Macduff, who is, I think, on the local advisory board for the park, and Mr. Gosden, the planner of the State Park Service, and A.W. Morrison, member of the State Park Board, who knows more than anybody about where the lines are and the history of the various tracts and acquisitions. One of the most interesting points of the day was to listen to Lyndon describe, in the most clear and cogent manner, to the national park people and to everybody, why it was necessary to proceed fast and now. The matter has been going on a long time, more than a year, I believe, and all the land is at last acquired, except the Sweeney Tract, which comes up for a supposedly final hearing before a judge the 25th of this month, I believe. Up to now, there's been a lot of talk about what to do with the park, but no evidence of anything really being done. And cynical newspaper people and many local people look upon it as just a protection, just a benefit for the LBJ Ranch, and believe that nothing will ever be done. They do not foresee that this little part of the hill country will one day be a unified national park. This land, our ranch, Lyndon's birthplace, all. Browning's quote, "Ours is not to wait for perfection, but to take what we have and make the most perfect out of it that we can, because that is our problem here. We must produce an area interesting to the public, a game fence with some white-tailed deer and buffalo and longhorns, and any local wildlife we can get behind it, some nature trails, some plantings of wildflowers of the Edwards Plateau, and we must do it quick, or else there will be no park to try to achieve perfection in for the long, long future." National Park Service men kept on talking about a master plan, which requires a topographic map, which requires time. Nothing can be done until something else is done before it. I wish I could remember Lennon's exact words. But when they were over, I felt that the whole project would either have a beginning now or founder now. So we went out in two cars to the park site. Two bulldozers had been acquired from neighbors overnight, and they were pushing down dead trees and small mesquite, and a fence crew was standing by, prepared to start the fence as soon as directions were given. At this point, two more characters of the play joined us. Dr. and Mrs. Donovan Carell, botanist friends of mine, whom I had called the night before and asked to drive down to help us identify all the species of trees and mark those worth saving. So Dr. and Mrs. Carell and I, with quantities of orange tape dispersed in one direction, Mr. Hubbard and Mr. Kruger concerning themselves with drive-offs from the highway and parking areas and picnic sites, Mr. Gosden and Mr. Macduff and John Ben and A.W. and Will Odom discussing variously fence lines and types of game and administration building and potable water and toilet facilities, and Roy White quite alone concentrating on exactly one thing, the old houses of stone and one partially of log, and how much of them was worth saving. He came away excited, enchanted. There were possibilities. Later, I went through it with him. I found an 1893 agricultural yearbook and an 1897 one, and a very old treadle sewing machine. It was an hilarious day. I had on my heaviest pants and boots and deer hunting underwear and two sweaters, but it was cold. It was a confusing, unbelievable assemblage, but yet a lot got done. The drive of my close personal friend. The fence line was finally decided on. Picnic areas, which might be changed later on, when and if the Sweeney Tract was acquired. Lyndon took time enough to take the national park people around our ranch to show them the deer and give them an idea of what this could be like later on. And finally, about 2:30, some 18 of us converged around the dining room table for a delicious lunch, which must have been very welcome to Mr. Hubbard and Mr. Kruger, who, they told me, had gotten up at 4. We spent the afternoon back at the track, marking trees, directing bulldozers. As the afternoon wore on, I felt I just could not go back. I would spend the night and return the next day. There would be another plane going then. So we worked until nearly dark, said goodbye to my good friends, the Donovan Correls. Gradually, various other members of the entourage drifted away, and we were back at the house around the fire when dark came. It was the time of leaving. Jim Jones and Marie and Mary were bundling up all the last things. There was that tone of sadness mixed with excitement about a departure. A long stay at the ranch, this had been, most of the time since Lyndon's operation. We gave him an early dinner, and then at 7:30, he left, and I settled around the fire with Mr. Hubbard and Mr. Kruger, and Pat and Lucy and their dogs, and made some calls about the old house. Through Mr. Klein, I found that it had originally been built by a German family named Sauer, and bought by the Beckmans in 1906. He did not know when it had been built, but judged by the square nails and the cut of the stone that it was probably 100 years old or more. The Sowers, he told me, had had a son who was ambassador to Germany. This much, at least, can be traced. I called Mrs. Hudspeth and gave her these details, and asked her if she would get her research friends at the university to look up some more facts about it. She was intrigued. She would. I phoned Roy White to come back the next morning, talk about the new shop for Mr. Klein, and very especially about our major project of enlarging our two bedrooms. If we are to live here for the rest of our lives, they must be changed from cupboards into comfortable, charming rooms. I want, most of all, a fireplace, bookshelves, and a view. I remembered all the times Lyndon and I had gone at Christmas to the Beckmans to carry a box of candy and a bottle of bourbon and a neighborly message, and how we had sat in that little house. For the first 5 or 6 years after we moved in 52, they had known Lyndon's mother and father and had been their neighbors, too. It would be interesting to trace the history of this little house, and how surprising that from it had sprung a man who was an ambassador of the United States, although we may find out that he was just the third office boy. And then I called Emily Crow. I had gotten word earlier in the day that her mother, Peggy Crow, had died in Baltimore, and that she, Emily, had come down to be with the Beverly Sheffields and prepare for the funeral. I had thought I would drive in to see her, but I found myself exhausted and went instead to bed about 9 o'clock. The earliest I've been in weeks and weeks. Well, Mrs. Crow's death marks the end of an era for me, a last tie with my childhood. In her home, I'd had such happy times when I was at boarding school, St. Mary's, and later in Austin when I was in the university. Well, the new year has gotten off to a bang, and it will be interesting to see what this day will bring forth.